This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
And good morning, my friend. Here we are on this Friday the 13th. I'm Terry Toad. Welcome to a special edition of the Friday Morning Talk Show. Hope you're not a triskaidekaphobic there, Mike. Are you?
I have no idea what that means.
Mike Meyer from Hillsboro. Joining us again here on AM 1540. He's such an interesting guy to talk to. You don't know what a triskaidekaphobic is? That's somebody who fears 13. Tris is 3, deck 10, a phobic 13.
Okay.
And did you know that there's at least one Friday the 13th every year, but no more than 3?
I did not know that.
There you do. See, you just learned something today.
Wow.
How about that? I think we only have one this year, and this is it. So live it up. There was Cinco de Mayo, and now there's Friday the 13th.
Where do you get this information?
Hey, it's called drinking lots of coffee and ingesting lots of caffeine in the morning.
and bookmarking Wikipedia, and, I guess.
Well, no, actually, it's, you know, I don't know. I've known that for a long time, going all the way back to high school somehow. You know how these stupid little facts stick in your head, and you have no rhyme nor reason for it. So that's the reason why, Mike. Mike Meyer, good morning, sir. It's good to have you back in studio before you head back to China. And we wanted to talk to you one more time before you left our presence. And first off, I guess that you may stick around for a little bit longer than what you anticipated.
Yeah, I was in the Hillsboro High School, always has their alumni basketball tournament. And because I've either been living in Texas or China or Korea, I've only gotten to play in this tournament maybe twice. Yeah. And so I was really excited to come back, you know, because I graduated in 2000. So it's been a couple years, and it's an opportunity to see my classmates. And my parents always kind of dissuade me from playing in this tournament because there's a tradition that every year someone has to get injured.
And somebody has surgery or something like that. I mean,
yeah, someone gets a really bad injury, like they tear their ACL or they break their leg. And I'm like, that's not going to happen to me. Yeah. You know, I don't have insurance. Why would that happen?
Yeah,
I live in Korea. I don't need insurance in the United States. I'm just going to be here for a couple weeks.
That's right. What could happen?
What could happen is 10 minutes to go in the championship with my team. I am in a full sprint, roll my ankle, and then someone steps on it.
Oh!
So I have a really bad sprained ankle right now that I'm not able to walk on it completely. I was substitute teaching at Hillsboro High School on crutches, which is a sight to see, and you can just see kids like, oh, we're going to have a fun class today.
Oh, yeah.
But no, so I might stick around for a couple more weeks to get some rehab just so I can be mobile in Korea. Because I don't have a car. I have to, you know, walk, or I have to take a subway or take a bus. And I got to walk to these places, and it's not so comfortable right now. So I will be going back to Korea at some point.
Eventually.
Yes.
Eventually. And Korea is where you reside now. And we've talked about your trips to China. And you happen to bring in a Chinese newspaper today, which absolutely is fascinating because they talk about the 60th anniversary of this newspaper, and they the way they mark historical events and how they put a spin on things is pretty remarkable.
And we need to tell your viewing audience that this paper is in English.
Yes, it is in English. It is in English.
People think, wow, he reads Chinese newspapers.
No, I could even understand that one. So, and English is not my best language sometimes, Mike. Mike is originally from Hillsboro, the son of Earl and Carol Meyer, and we're very pleased to have him back in the studio. Mike, when we talked before, one thing we didn't really go into too much, and it's kind of pertinent, I think, this time of year as we come up on graduations when parents kind of realize that, oh, well, here this fall my kids are going to go off to college, and it's sometimes the first time they've been away from home and that sort of thing. Basically, as a young man, you went to the other side of the world. And we live in troubled times. So it's got to be kind of scary for your parents. What kind of feedback did you get from them when you headed to the other side of the world?
Well, this was 2009. So I had lived away from home now for about 9 years.
Right.
Because when I left, I went to university. I was living away from home near Chicago.
But still, that's a three-hour drive.
Three-hour drive, yeah. So I can come away. Then I moved a little bit further. I was working in Joplin, Missouri, which is about a six-hour drive. And then starting in 2005, up until I went to China, I was living in Fort Worth, Texas. It's a 12-hour drive.
Right.
And my parents are not the biggest fans of flying. So I didn't see them that often in Texas. And so I think the key is just like going my parents got baby steps before this big decision of, you know, it's not seeing me that often.
As a parent, I can relate to that.
Yeah, and then we went from a baby step to an adult step pretty quickly, and I moved to China in February of 2009, and instead of being a 12-hour drive away, I was a 12-hour flight.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was definitely something my parents had to cope with, per se.
What was their biggest fear?
Their biggest fear, I think, as a parent, not being able to be there if I was in trouble. Mm-hmm. Like, if anything, I mean, it doesn't matter the situation. You know, my mom or my dad said at some point, well, if something happens, we can't do anything. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't like a sympathy. It was more like a threat. Like,
well, yeah,
we can't do anything. So you're up, you know, you're on your own. And one of the things that I did before I left is I pretty much wrote out about 3 or 4 pages of questions and answers that, you know, if I was a parent, these are things that I would ask my kid and try to answer these questions. So I had every possible situation and scenario and gave the answers to them. And so then once I showed them that I knew what I was doing and I knew what I would do if I got in certain situations, then they're like, oh, well, you know, okay, you kind of know what you're doing, I would guess.
So it was an educational process, really.
Yeah, it was. And I had to educate them on the Chinese culture as much as I knew, even though I'd never been there. I had to, you know, let them know about, you know, some of the safeguards I had and where I'd be living and the people that I knew and the people I'd be working with and you know, giving them, you know, just like, you know, when you're 8 years old going to a slumber party,
as
long as they have the phone numbers and a way to contact you, they're at ease. Right. But, you know, 60 years ago when people were going off to wars all around the world, they maybe weren't even able to communicate with them. So
what was your biggest fear?
My biggest fear.
Or not necessarily a fear, but maybe a concern.
I would definitely say communism.
that's pretty big.
You know, living in not free society, I don't know how else to say it, you're concerned because you hear stories, you hear about personal freedoms, you hear about, you know, these Chinese detention centers, you hear about Tibet and how people aren't allowed to go there. I've never read in the Journal Register, oh, you can't go to Vermont because the government says so. Like, I've never heard that. And so it's, you're concerned because you're like, well, you know, I don't want to step on someone's toes and then get in trouble and just because of ignorance. And so I was very nervous based on my lack of knowledge going there.
How close to the line can you get in China as far as freedom of speech is concerned? Probably not very close.
I think you can get very close to that line just because of pure ignorance, because you don't know how that the line is always moving, that China is, the government's getting smarter and smarter, and you know, I did a talk last night at the Litchfield Library, and I'd like to thank everyone for coming last night. We had a wonderful time. The Litchfield Public Library was just wonderful with their facilities and their resources. And one of the things I talked about is the United States government's different protections that they have and different computer programs like Carnivore and Norris Insight and these supercomputers that are able to check our email, are able to listen to our phone calls. And I found this on Wikipedia.
Now, you can't always trust Wikipedia.
No, you can't, but in all likelihood,
it's probably a lot of truth to it.
There's a lot of truth, yes. And so if I found this on Wikipedia about the United States, and we're in a free society,
and
we know that China's technology is much greater than ours, then we're in trouble. You know, I have a friend of mine, he used to do computer security for the state of Illinois, and he said, I work and live in this industry, and even I can't fathom how strong their computer system is. It's called the Great Firewall for a reason. And so, I mean, you could, you know, send an email with a lot of words having to do with, you know, revolution, but you're just talking about, you know, conquering your fears or some metaphoric thing. And, you know, you could have a phone call, you could have someone drop on your doorstep.
Is that because the Chinese government officials don't understand our use of metaphors, that sort of thing?
I think, I mean, I, again, I this is all kind of from my own experiences, but I, like I was telling you, I read about this program on Wikipedia. They have keywords that if you type in on your email, maybe it will pop up. So if, you know, if you say, you know, Christianity and revolution and evangelism and all these different kind of buzzwords, then maybe there's a possibility that something could happen to you.
Does the term capitalism, is that included in there? No. Seriously, because China's more and more capitalistic than it ever used to be.
I would doubt it, because they're definitely, they are a capitalist country with human rights deficiencies, I guess we could say it. They are very much about the dollar, and they are continually increasing their economy. But I don't know. But I mean, and I told the people last night at the library, I don't want to dissuade anyone from going to China. It's a wonderful country. I had a wonderful time, some great people. But because of their governmental system, you have to be careful just in case.
We, as Americans, with the freedom of speech, we have comedians who nightly skewer our politicians, skewer celebrities. And I suppose none of this goes on in China. And just to make an offhanded joke, like we would sometime be talking now, here, today, that would get you in trouble.
It would. It would. And one of the I had some great mentors when I was in China. One was my former table tennis coach in China. He's Swedish. He's married to a Chinese who's from Beijing. So he's been going back and forth to China for 20 years. Another mentor of mine I met through Toastmasters. His wife is Chinese. He's lived there in Beijing for 10 years. He's told me that his father-in-law had some type of government or military involvement. And so he knew a lot of things, and I knew to listen to him. And when he says, you know, watch your mouth and don't say anything about the government that's very negative or that you think, you know, wouldn't be something you'd say out loud, you know, you need to be careful. So, yeah, I mean, I would definitely. And the reason is that some of these famous people in China are being held either in house arrest or they're in some type of prison. You know, we had the Nobel Peace Prize winner who, you know, talked a lot about revolution and had I think he had a petition signed. I can't remember all the details of that, but I don't know if they know where he is, or if they do, he's under lock and key. They have one of their famous artists who is also, they don't know where he is. He's somewhere in a prison, so.
Somebody knows where he is, but not the general public.
Exactly. I mean, but if you're more famous and you make these comments, you're actually going to get in more trouble than less.
Is there blowback from the fact that maybe a Chinese citizen comes to America and becomes an American citizen and criticizes the Chinese government? Are they basically on a watch list from that point on, more than likely?
You know, if you jump citizenship to the United States and you go back to China, I don't know why that would be looked positively by the Chinese government. But I mean, I don't know much about watch lists. But I knew that when I was in China, I was there to work and learn about Chinese business culture, which is, you know, how this book, you know, I wrote a book called A Focused Pursuit in China. Like, that's how that came about. I wanted to learn the Chinese language, and I was very focused on that. And so I wasn't trying to get in trouble. I was trying to learn and have a good time.
Amazing.
And try to let my parents know that I was safe. And
then once you got to China, how often were you able to communicate with them?
I communicated with them mostly through email. Maybe I would email them a couple times a week and maybe give them a call once every week or two, just to let them know about what's going on and let them know how exciting it is to be here and all the interesting things I'm seeing.
What's a 9-hour difference, something like that?
12 hours.
12 hours?
Yeah, I think it was 12 hours. So when it was morning for me, it'd be night for them and vice versa. So, you know, I was usually calling them right after my Chinese lesson, or, you know, right after I got a foot massage, and, you know, I was really relaxed and laid back.
My, you brought in some pictures here, and I thought you were pulling my leg the last time we talked, and you were talking about, you know, getting a massage for, well, it was $10, whatever it was, and that you would watch this acrobatic. And there it is, it's pictures. This is, what, 200 people in this auditorium getting a massage, and they're watching this entertainment thing.
Yeah, and they're spinning plates, like, you know,
like on the old Ed Sullivan show, for goodness sakes.
Yeah.
Now, you don't know Ed Sullivan.
I know Ed Sullivan.
You know Ed Sullivan?
I was in Bye Bye Birdie at high school.
Okay, there you go.
He was featured in that.
There you go. There you go. But I thought you were pulling my leg. Honest to God, I thought you were. But this is it's a whole different culture there. It's whack.
It is. And one of the things that, and I talk about in the book is culture shock. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I experienced because you're in the United States. You're used to living in Montgomery County. And then you go to another country that's completely different. Nothing. No signs are in English in some areas. You have McDonald's, but maybe that's the only American restaurant you know. So you have to learn what the foods are and where to eat. And you're starting, you feel like a toddler because you're starting from scratch in a lot of different ways.
Mike, there are differences in the state of Illinois from the Deep South to Chicago. I mean, cultural differences, huge differences.
Oh, yeah.
I can just imagine going to another country. It's got to be really an exhilarating experience. Were you on a high for a while when you first got there?
I was, because you're so fascinated because you know certain things is absolute truth. Like, I showed a picture of
the dog meat.
Yeah, you said it.
Yeah.
My first weekend, I'm in a restaurant and I open the menu and there's blended dog meat on the menu. And you hear about these things and you're like, yeah, it's not real.
You just kind of blow it off.
Yeah. And then you see it on the menu and
there's a picture of it on the menu.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they want you to know what the food looks like. And,
sure.
So it's about $4 for a serving, and that's kind of when it really kicked in of like, wow, we're not in Kansas anymore, Dorothy.
Let's digress a little bit from your trip to China and the book. Are you going to write any more books? Is that in the future?
Oh, definitely. I really enjoy the process. You know, I have to applaud, you know, Hillsborough High School for definitely preparing me. I had a all-star team of teachers there. You know, Mrs. Hewitt, Mr. Diebendurfer, Mrs. Brink, Ms. Lively. I had these wonderful, outstanding teachers that, you know, taught me about writing and English and vocab. Dottie Payton, she was my fifth grade teacher. She taught me how to outline, you know, and so all these people set the foundation for me to succeed, along with, you know, I used to write for the Montgomery County News and the Hillsborough Journal and now the Journal News. So I got a lot of experience there. But no, I would definitely love to write because you're saying what's on your mind and you want to be able to let people know about your experiences. And that's all this book was, is talking about. I'm not an expert about Chinese.
And you don't claim to be.
And I don't claim to be, no. Yeah. And, you know, I didn't get a major in Chinese literature or business culture. I'm just saying these are the experiences I had in China. And if you follow these tips, you know, you can call them business tips, you can call them missionary tips, you're going to be ready for your adventure there. So, you know, I would definitely love to write one about Korea in the future because the United States and South Korea are currently developing a free trade agreement that could pass through. And I think that South Korea is also becoming very famous for people going there to teach English. And so I think definitely in the next 10 years, you're going to be hearing a lot about South Korea. And, you know, look at your cell phone. It's probably an LG or
a
Samsung.
It's an LG. It's from Korea. Absolutely. Mike, let's talk about your current business in Korea.
Yes.
And what you do and how long you've been there.
Okay. Well, I've been in South Korea for a year now. Mm-hmm. I originally went there to teach at a university. I went to Olivet Nazarene University, which if any parents are still looking for good schools for their kids to go to, it was a wonderful school up near Kankakee. And I majored in mass communication, and I minored in youth ministry and Christian education. Had a friend of mine that was teaching English at Korea Nazarene University, and talking to a friend on Facebook, said there were some job openings, and I ended up getting a job going to Korea, thinking I'm going to teach English. And I get there, and they said, well, you have an MBA. You're going to teach business.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, so I got to teach business to some Korean students, and we had some Malaysian and some African students, and had a really good time, was teaching there. And then this new experience that I'll be starting, my new adventure that I'll be starting pretty much in a couple weeks, I'll be working for a company called Unichal, and what they do is they're a software company. Korea has many technology companies, so it's hard to tell the difference between them. But one of the things they do is they do smartphone software for LG. And so all the, you know, a lot of the smartphones that we have that they're doing the software for. So that's one arm. Another arm of what they do is I was talking to some of the Spanish students I was doing substitute teaching for. They have what's called a one-click dictionary. So you can take this device and then kind of hover it over a word in the book with like a sensor And then if you don't know the word, you can click on it, and then the word, the definition will pop up. And so you don't have to worry about opening up this huge dictionary, going to dictionary.com. You can just get the answer. So I'm going to be doing international marketing and public relations for them. And I'm the first ever native English speaker slash foreigner they've ever hired.
Really?
Yeah. So I'm really excited because who knows where this could go.
It's an exciting time.
It is. It's a very exciting time. And these are experiences that you can't get anywhere else. Not many people can say I'm the only English-speaking person at my workplace. And that's exciting for me. It's daunting for others.
And the ability for the United States to trade now with Korea, or soon be able, you know, the free trade agreement that's basically pending, the world definitely is getting smaller.
It is.
And we need to learn about other cultures. We need to learn about other peoples. And this is a very, very important part of learning to get along.
It is. And while I've been here, I read the book The World is Flat, and it's from Thomas Friedman, and it talks about how, you know, we are, you know, I think it was HP is selling their computer in 187 countries. And it talked about the supply chain of putting together a Dell computer and how you're using, you know, pieces from Taiwan and China and the United States, and it's becoming a flat world, and it's important. It's my opinion that it's important to not only be able to speak other languages, you know, like Chinese, you know, like Korean, but also just to understand, you know, these cultures. So one day that, you know, we'll be able to work with them on a regular basis.
And I would think folks in your position who have had these experiences would make marvelous teachers for high school students and college students here in the States.
Oh, tell my dad that. He knows. He's been trying to get me to come back to Hillsboro and teach, and I tell him, I said, I'm having a wonderful time, and you know, I feel like a calling to be there, and I get to teach. I get to teach when I'm a substitute teacher and I'm talking to my students about China and Korea.
And another thing, you're a good representative of a citizen from the United States of America.
I hope so.
Well, you know, I think that you, I just knowing you here in the past couple, 3 weeks, Mike, I think we can assume that. So I think the fact that other nationalities see a real life American and can understand and can see how he lives or she lives, it's a big plus for us.
Yeah, and I hope to do that.
And us being the United States.
Exactly. And I'm the only person, you know, I don't know if China knows where Hillsboro is now.
Yeah, well, that's good. That's
exactly
good.
I had to explain exactly where it was, and you know, they know St. Louis, they know Chicago. You know, the guys in China love talking about NBA basketball.
Sure.
So I guarantee they're going to be watching the Bulls beat the Heat coming up in the conference finals. But no, I really definitely encourage students to, you know, maybe minor in international business or minor in Japanese. If there's a culture that you like. I talked to a kid at Hillsboro High School. He said, I want to watch Japanese anime and know what they're talking about.
Yes. I've heard more than one person.
Sure.
I've heard more than one person. And say something to that effect. I wish I understood what they were saying. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I definitely encourage kids to, you know, consider a major or a minor in these international areas. I also strongly consider, you know, high school kids to do these people-to-people or Rotary exchange programs. Go on a study abroad when you are in college. There was a young lady, a high school student at Litchfield, who came to the talk last night at Litchfield Library, and she said, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, majoring in Chinese literature and then doing a study abroad my sophomore or my junior year. And I said, that's amazing. And I said, I asked her mom, I said, why? And she said, I have no idea where this came from.
Doesn't make any difference.
It doesn't. You know, and if you're excited and interested in a specific country or a specific language, go for it. We still need French and German.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
You can get a job.
But the new business partners are in the Far East.
Well, I mean, let's
face it.
There's a lot of opportunity, you know, outside of the United States. If you have skills, you can find a job.
Michael, we are out of time. I want to thank you so much for coming by and visiting with us. And anytime you're back, please make it a point to come see us. And shoot me an email once in a while, and just to let us know how you're doing. And I really appreciate you coming in today.
No, thanks for having me. I look forward to coming back.
Michael Meyer, our guest today on the Friday Morning Talk Show on WSMI AM 1540. Stick around. The man, the myth, and the legend, Earl Sarles, up next with the opening market report here on AM 1540.